Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. This is Topics with Trish from Your Voice Radio Network, brought to you, of course, live from the Red Room. I am a host on the Your Voice Radio Network, along with the team, Donna Shear, Lee Roberts, Dr. Amelia Rose. We've got varying shows, varying broadcast times, so please follow the shows or connect with the other host. You can visit our website, which is still growing, still being developed actually, but you can see some of the backgrounds on our hosts by visiting www.yourvoiceradio.one. Follow along with our shows. You can visit the www.blogtalkradio.com/yourvoiceradionetwork. And sign in with your social ID, follow the shows, stay updated on everything that we do, and receive information on every one of our broadcasts, or just watch for our Facebook shares. We do that as well. So anyway, welcome everyone. Today is Thursday, March 30th. We are pushing the last day of March. Here comes spring, and I am ready for it. The warmer weather helps my body to move better, helps give me more energy and want to move better, do things better. It kind of inspires me to get outside of the house. Cold weather interferes with my pain treatment and my daily abilities. I isolate more. I get depressed. I get stressed out. Which does what? Makes my pain much, much worse. Chronic pain is described or is considered to be any pain that lasts for more than 3 months and can be debilitating or life-changing, is either required by your medical physician or by your pain treatment care or to get into pain treatment care, prescription opioid use, medical marijuana is one of those issues that we're still debating. Trying to find the right medications, the right doctors that you connect with, the right team. And it is a team effort. You've got to do your part as much as you expect the doctors to do their part. Now, I'm going to take you briefly through my decade-long journey. And we just had a comment post up on our live video feed. Remember, anybody can join the live video feed, and I can see your comments post up. It's a great way to interact and to share your thoughts and ideas and your comments. You can also call the studio 929-477-2779. So one of our listeners, one of our video viewers, pardon me, I apologize. I forgot to turn my notifications off. Let's make sure that hopefully that won't happen anytime again soon. I don't want to disrupt the video feed. Anyway, one of our comments that came across from a viewer here in the Southern Illinois area is, you know, knowing the pain life well. And I know she's a strong advocate for the chronic pain and treatment side of things. She's got on here that one doctor, a Dr. Mark Isbin, describes pain as a terrorist. And it is, really, it is. When you live 24/7, day after day after day, for a long period of time, and not knowing whether or not you're going to be getting the help you need, and how do you go about finding that, when this all of a sudden comes in and disrupts your entire life, it can be one of the most crippling situations that you face, because you're not dying. I'm not talking chronic pain that is for terminal patients. I understand that's a different level of pain. And that's a different type of situation to where, you know, yes, the patient has been ill, and unfortunately, yes, they are going to pass away. This is living with an injury or a condition that causes chronic pain to take over your life. So as I was saying, I want to get briefly into my decade-long journey. And as I go through today's topics, I'm going to be opening up a little bit more about this. First of all, I have a spinal cord trauma. My spinal vertebral and disc area, the bone section of my spinal system, my central nervous system, has been busted and bruised and damaged by multiple beatings, of course, but by the last severe beating I took, which my second husband used a 60-style heavy chrome leg chair and trapped me in a corner naked at 5 a.m. in the morning and beat me repeatedly with this chair, slamming it down on my back, and I'm in the corner and I'm cowering down and I'm naked and I got my hands over my neck and on the back of my head, and I, you know, I'm like in tornado position, and thinking to myself, my God, he's going to kill me this time. And you know, he just kept hitting me and slamming my back, my neck area and my back all the way top to bottom with this chair. Now, what happened when he was done, spit on me, walked away, went downstairs, grabbed a beer out of the fridge and sat down on the couch, could have cared less. I crawled to the phone, called 911. When the police got there, they didn't even come upstairs to check on me. I was sitting at the top of the steps in my bathrobe, that is all I had on, and he was sitting in the living room with the beer. Now, they didn't offer any help. They didn't offer any medical treatment. They didn't offer to take me for treatment. They didn't offer, you know, in fact, their exact words were, either one of you leaves or both of you are going to jail. I knew that his parents had bought that house for him, for us to move into, but it was still for him. So I didn't have a ground to stand on. So I packed up clothes to wear to work that day, grabbed my ID, my little wad of cash. I think I had like 10 bucks on me. And I got in the car and I went to a friend's house for tea. And then I went to work and I worked following from that point forward. Now, what happened? Over the next month, I began to realize that every time I stepped down on my left side, it felt like an electrical shock shooting through my entire body, all the way up and then surging inside of my head. It happened with every step. It stayed like this for probably a couple of months. I never got it checked out. I had other things to worry about. I needed to work. I needed to find a place to live. I needed to get my kids back. You know, a lot of things going on. So I ignored every bit of it. And I just went on about my merry way. Nothing new to me. Every injury, every beating I had sustained, there was no medical treatment. So anyway, ahead 10 years, I find out that he had actually bruised my spine so badly that he bruised my spinal canal. And where it was bruised, these cystic sacs grew called syringomyelia. It's a very rare condition that they normally find in paraplegics, quadriplegics. It can be part of a Chiari formation birth defect, but I had multiple cysts. I had one extending from my T3 down to my T9, one from my C5 to my C7, one from my C3 to C5. So they were kind of layered and distributed throughout the upper part of my body. When they did multiple scans on me, and I've had 10 years worth of scans done, there's stenosis, there's bulging disc, there's degenerative disc disease, there's rips and tears, and there's, now becoming even, the fibromyalgia is secondary to that, and the COPD is secondary. But this is a condition that affects neuropathy that shoots through my legs, burns my feet 24/7, cramps my calves, causes my fingers to constantly cramp up and burn, and migraines that just seep in. And I've learned to work through them. Some days I can't even do the radio shows or wear the headphones or drive 10 miles. It's just not possible. So for a year, I was in bed. I couldn't get up. I could hardly get up, walk around, hardly get up, take care of myself, take care of things. Now, the first thing they did when they diagnosed me, they said, these should not be causing you any pain. Now, the American Syringomyelia Alliance Project, which is ran by Patrice Shoblin out of Dallas, Texas. They have research that is done by a team of specialists. There are various clinics that do studies on this, but sadly only some 10,000 patients across the country are ever diagnosed with this condition. Doctors don't know much about it in general. You know, most neurosurgeons and neurologists say, that's nothing. Okay, try living with it. Try the change of barometric pressure and what it does to my body. Try the change of stress and tension and activities that cause a surge in my spinal fluid flow, which then causes these cysts to fill up with fluid and expand inside of my spinal canal, causing pressure and doing damage along the sides, and of course to various nervous system problems that do occur. Now, this causes problems with bladder function and bowel movements, walking and exercise and quality of life issues are really extreme. So what do we do? The first pain doctor that I get involved with, this is back in 2008, beginning at January 2008. I had been assigned to Center for Interventional Pain Management over in St. Louis. Right away, without question, without actually doing any nerve test or anything like that, the first thing he did was put me on methadone. Now, I have never done anything, I have drank alcohol. I've used marijuana. Back in the days before I ever got pregnant, I had a boyfriend who had some cocaine issues, and I've used it, I've tried it, but it wasn't a thing for me. Yes, a viewer knows exactly which pain doctor I'm talking about as soon as I said the methadone. Indeed, apparently she must have gone through the same thing. It's almost killed me. I was seeing, I had three specialists. I had my lung doctor for my COPD issues. I've been seeing him for years. He's great. I had my psychiatrist because I was going through my third nervous breakdown from the pain and my mother's falling, heart attack and all of the issues with her. And, you know, having to give up working, and it just triggered that third nervous breakdown. So here I am in the midst of all of this, and, you know, I can barely get up out of bed, can barely make my own coffee, can barely bathe myself. He puts me on methadone. My psychiatrist has got me on antidepressants, and my pulmonary physician has me on breathing. Okay, now, in January, when it turned the new year of 2008, I updated my medication list just like a good little patient should. I have this doctor prescribing this medication, this dosage, this is what I take. Each one of my specialists got a report. On February 8th, Robbie came home from work, found me almost dead on the couch, got me to the emergency room here in Breeze at St. Joe's, and they immediately had to put me on a CPAP machine. I was in respiratory distress. My O2 levels, my saturated O2 levels, were actually down to almost 4, not 40, almost 4, almost dead within minutes. If he had been probably 15, 20 minutes later, who knows what would have happened. He literally did save my life in the physical sense. I was in the hospital for a few days, and what they told me I needed to go off of was my very low-dose prescription of Xanax to control my PTSD. That was the one medication that the doctors said caused the problem. It wasn't the methadone. It wasn't the antidepressant. It wasn't all of these other things. No, 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 no. It was my 0.5 milligram twice a day Xanax. No, it wasn't. I had been taking Xanax since I was diagnosed with PTSD back in 1997. And, you know, here they are. They bring me in. They put me in the hospital. I'm on 5 liters push oxygen with a mask that just pushes it into my body because got to repair my lungs, okay? And Robbie's taking my scripts over to CVS to get filled before I can get discharged. And the pharmacist there said, oh, my God, this cocktail is going to kill her. You know, she needs to get taken care of. This I chose. No, 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 no. No more methadone. Not doing that. I need something else. I switched pain management treatment. Went to an internal specialist not too far away. No, went to another pain doctor in St. Louis. He was fabulous. He did some treatments on me. We did corticoid steroid injections. We did cauterization of my C3 through my C7 nerve on the left-hand side. They did punctures and they did nerve tests, and he looked at the MRI on my back and said, you would have to be operated on from head to toe if we were ever going to fix this, and that's still not going to fix the cystic sacs that are inside of your spinal canal. There is no surgery to fix those. They can't remove them. If they involve up to 90% of your spine, they will put shunts in. But if they do, you know, if it's anything under 90%, you're not even considered surgical unless you're a child. So we go on and on and on with this. Different doctors, different treatments, pain patches, and you name it. The first 4 years were miserable. 3 years. Okay, so then I finally find a doctor, internal medicine specialist in Highland. And he puts me on a 80 milligram extended release morphine with 300 milligram Lyrica twice a day. This starts to level out my pain. This starts to keep me so that I can get out of bed and I can do things. And, you know, I have my good days where I can go out and do things with Robbie or go to the mall or, you know, maybe take a short ride or do something. So I'm feeling like I'm back in the game, back in my life again. All right. I am, of course, on full disability, which I hate because I am only 54 years old. And I've been at this for, in September of 2017, it will be a full 10 years that this whole journey started for me. So trying to find a doctor, trying to find treatments that work, trying to figure out what's wrong with us, trying to live with the day in and day out constant pain that is there, that is relentless, that is, you know, no matter what position you sit in, no matter how much hot, cold compresses you use, no matter how many hot showers you take, or no matter, you know, you try to do exercises, sometimes the exercises are good, sometimes they trigger pain. So you've got to be careful. You've got to find out what works for you. First of all, we've got to realize, the biggie is what's scaring everyone of us that are in pain management right now is the new federal guidelines on opioid use. So in my journey, something that's happened recently is that in March of 2016, I decided I am sick of taking all of this medication. I can't handle it anymore, this morphine. I'm starting to feel like I'm being poisoned. So I get off of the high-dose Lyrica. I get off of the 80-milligram extended-release morphine, and I go down to less than 20 milligram of morphine a day using the immediate release capsules, 15 milligram, and breaking them in half and taking them 2-3 times a day as I need them. I am trying to be more active. Of course, at that time, working with a doctor to earn my medical marijuana card so that I would be able to keep myself off of the morphine. Now, I've been doing fabulous with this. Then my pain doctor, sadly, passes away unexpectedly. Now, they assigned me. I didn't even get a call from Vigilant Pain Care that Dr. Reynolds had died. One day I get a call last month from Center for Interventional Pain Management of Missouri calling about transfer of my files to this new doctor, Dr. Potta's office. Now, considering that Dr. Potta and I had already crossed paths once, I was very hesitant. Do I want to see this service again? They didn't help me before. In fact, when he found, when I came in on my fourth or fifth visit, still complaining about the pain in my neck, he actually threw my file at me and told me to get out of his office. He couldn't help me. Now, here I am again, going to quote-unquote, Center for Interventional Pain Management, seeing a doctor, seeing the Illinois side of them, and a Dr. Belcher. Now, I just met with him the other day. He goes over this plan. First thing he tells me is, well, Illinois just passed new legislation that only cancer patients can have morphine now. So I can no longer prescribe you morphine. Are you kidding me? This is what's been working for me. I've been able to get up and be more proactive in my own care. And you know, what am I going to do now? So he gives me a prescription for a Percocet. At first, he objects to prescribing the Lyrica, and then he says, okay, I'll go ahead and do this since you've been on this already. I ask him how he feels about medical marijuana, because I tell him that I had been working with Phil Dudak at Vigilant Pain Care to get my medical marijuana card. Now, I have been with this same injury diagnosed for 10 solid years. Medicare, Medicaid stipulations are that if your condition is not caused or a reflection of the use of the marijuana, then yes, you can go on to the medical marijuana treatment. But of course, you know, you have to have these list of accepted diagnoses. I have 3 diagnoses that are listed within the top 10. So there should be no problem with me getting my medical marijuana card to stay off of the heavy dose prescriptions and opioids that they would rather give me. Now, here I am, step one again, saying, okay, now I can no longer use the morphine to supplement and take away that instant kind of pain that I get, you know, or ease up my migraines or anything else. So I'm going to have to go and find out what Percocet's all about. You know, they've tried oxycodone. They've tried Vicodin. They've tried Frova. They've tried all of these different, the list of medications that I've been on and tried has just grown and grown and grown. And finally, when I get to a point to where I'm stable and I'm okay and the pain hasn't gone away, it's tolerable for me. And I'm a pretty tough old broad. I can get through a lot, and I will keep on going when I have to keep on going. I try not to be a burden to Robbie's life, you know, so that he's not taking care of me instead of me taking care of us. And I try to be involved with caring for my house and cleaning my house and doing our laundry and just daily life. I have to watch so that I don't overexert myself. If I move too fast, turn my head too fast, if I bend over too much, if I lift too much, I'm putting myself down. So I have to take care of me. And I have to say, okay, you've been going through this for 10 years now. Know your body. Know what's going on. Okay, so that's my journey and where I'm at right now. And then I find out the other day that now they have done a brain scan and found out that I have an enlarged basilar artery at the base of my brain. Now, I don't know, you know, I know that for the past 6 months there's been extreme pressure in my head. Doctors and I have talked about this. Also, you know, I mean, I don't know how much, you never know, what are they putting down? What are they recording? It's not like you have a recorder on whenever you go in to talk to your doctor. You only know what you're telling them, and then they are interpreting and writing down. So I think finding a doctor that works for you, who is knowledgeable and who is willing to educate themselves, not only on your condition, but what's available out there for your condition. How much of a team player are they wanting to include you in being, instead of just saying, I am the professional and this is what I know and this is what you will do, or you can go find yourself another doctor? Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, that happens all the time. People get very frustrated with their physicians. And of course, you know, now with these new opioid laws that are coming out, even more doctors are going to be terrified in prescribing opioids and how they use them. So painkiller patients, beware. This law will directly affect your life. and whether or not your state approves of medical marijuana and you have a medical marijuana allowance is also going to be a strong suit in, you know, or do you want the medical marijuana? Do you use something else? What about herbal supplements? What about exercise? What about yoga? What about calming and stress relief? Do you know these kinds of tools? Now, there's a lot of different resources out there. I did go through and I researched some information, of course, before the show started up, and I hope that I can get through everything for you. If not, you know, I will be posting the links on the video page. I don't want to be bouncing back and forth while we're on the air, but, you know, first of all, let's take a look at this new law that they are stating that, you know, first of all, it passed Chris Christie. Some may remember Governor Chris Christie. You know, you may have seen the news this morning on the Today Show about the whole Bridgegate thing. And, you know, I know that he had a problem with addiction. And here he is as the lead of Donald Trump's fight against opioid prescriptions and usage. The DEA is in on this. They monitor doctors. Now, yesterday on Netflix, I watched, I love their documentaries, and the documentary is called Dr. Feelgood. It goes back to the late 90s and the early millennial change on Dr. Horowitz. And on the OxyContin usage. Now, OxyContin was a very strong drug. And back then, they didn't have the restrictions and the guidelines that they do today. Back then, you know, things... I got to turn that light directly out of my eyes. Sorry. And they didn't have the guidelines and restrictions that they do today. General practitioners were writing prescriptions for these, you know, multiples of dosages and heavy dosages of OxyContin. Now, OxyContin is, of course, a synthetic combination of oxycodone and morphine kind of base. So, you know, it is, I think, a level 3, level 4, level 5 drug. Anyway, so this Dr. Horowitz was seeing pain patients from across the country, and he was prescribing, oh my God, the dosages that he was prescribing. No wonder the DEA came crashing in on him. Now, doctors, even general practitioners, they have the ability to write these prescriptions, but there is most definitely restrictions that they have to follow. They have to maintain strict records on the dosages and urine sample screenings, and, you know, keep you within no more than a 30-day prescription at a time that, you know, you actually have to go in, be physically seen. These cannot be just called in. The doctor has to have a relationship with you. They have to be treating you. I'm all good with that. I have no problem with that. But don't make it any more difficult than it already is. And don't tell me, you know, Dr. Belcher has already started off on a bad foot. Because, as I said, he told me now, after 8 years of heavy morphine, 6 years of heavy morphine, and then kicking myself down, taking charge of it myself, to say no more, I'm stepping down and I'm using less than, you know, 20 to 25 milligrams a day of morphine, where I was using up to 110 milligrams a day. That's a huge drop in morphine use that I took that on myself. The doctors didn't tell me, hey, you know, you can't do this anymore. I did that. I'm the one who felt bad. I'm the one who was feeling sick and poisoned, and I could tell too many medications. I take turmeric. Turmeric is a great source of helping reduce inflammation. And I take that 3 times a day, and it's like a prescription dosage, well, a over-the-counter dosage of 548 milligrams. And that is where, you know, the good stable part is. Now, with these new guidelines, as I said, Dr. Belcher already started off on a bad foot with me in telling me that only cancer patients can now receive morphine in the state of Illinois. Supposedly legislation passed 3 months ago. Well, considering I had my morphine prescription filled 2 months ago, you know, kind of wanted me to go researching, and I've brought up the Illinois 720 ILCS statutes and prescribing and all of that of these Schedule 3, 4, 5 drugs. There is no mention of that particular sentence. Only cancer patients now get morphine. Other outpatient pain patients are not able to get this drug. So strike one for Dr. Belcher on that one. Will I be researching, trying to find somebody who can be honest with me and quit trying to force me into their mold of treatment? I don't have a problem with examining different treatment options, but if I come in and I say, okay, I've been at this for 10 years, this is what is now working for me and has been since I chose to get myself off of all these heavy drugs. I reduced my Lyrica prescription. I got myself off of every other medication. I now take 0.5 milligrams of Xanax twice a day to control my PTSD and my anxiety levels. I take 200 milligrams of Lyrica. I take, as I said, less than 20 to 25 milligrams of instant release morphine, which lasts 4 to 6 hours. That's it on my pain treatment level. Am I as active as I used to be? No. Has my quality of life been affected? Extremely. Do I have to adjust my schedule and take wellness days to sit home, lie back, and do absolutely nothing at least 2, 3, 4 times a week? That's my life. Isolating. It gets difficult. It gets depressing. It's hard to connect and talk with people about it because I don't want to bring people down with my bad, bad, sad, sad stories. I don't want to always be bringing up the issues of my health. I don't even want to make it an issue between Robbie and I. But do I have my days? More so than not. And these laws are going to be difficult. And these changes and trying to find that new doctor who is willing to work with me on my level and bring on some of his own ideas and some of his own treatments. It has to be a cooperative effort in order to engage the patient to make them feel validated and to make them feel like someone is listening to their concerns. That is their job. And when the government starts stepping into the path of our medical professionals and saying, you can do this and you can't do this, and we want you to treat your pain patients like this, you know, fine, give them some guidelines to go by, but they don't have medical licenses. Our government, sorry, I got a hair in my eye. They don't have medical licenses. They do not have the ability to determine just how bad my pain is. There's no test. And that's where the sad part comes in, is because, you know, since there is no test to determine pain levels, you know, yeah, we've got all of them little different emoji faces, okay? Are you at number 1? Are you at number 10? Are you at number 5? Normally, I'm between a 4 and a 6 I have my days where I go to a 7, maybe an 8. It's very difficult because everybody's tolerance level is different. So, you know, if I've been trying to cope through this longer than you have, or you have a different resilience level than I do, or I have a lower esteem level than you do, you know, we may have a lot of different things about ourselves, but just like science and just like our individual personalities, each and every treatment base may not be the same for every patient. So if doctors, you know, I know that the difficulties in trying to find doctors and somebody that you truly connect with. I just got a great comment about a doctor yesterday. I'm going to see if my PCP can send me a referral for a consult for this new physician. Got another comment coming in here. This, our listener has been commenting and, you know, just kind of different comments, yeses, noes, and, you know, how awfuls. Arachnoiditis is 48 on the McGill pain scale. You know, there you go. How do you measure 48 on a pain scale? Is that 4-2-8? You know, that's about where I am at. That's my daily living. Now, I have a business management accounting background for 20, 25 years. I was with a great company, and I was making awesome money, not excessive money, but good money for being there for 4 years and having started that position when I moved, relocated from Pennsylvania. So, you know, and then here I am 4 years after being employed there, having to go on short-term disability to long-term disability, eventually on to Social Security disability. If my pain management isn't managed and isn't treated appropriately, I can barely walk. I can barely stand up, sit down. I can't sleep right. If I sleep for 2 or 3 hours at a time and then wake and move and then go back to sleep 2-3 hours at a time, it's better than killing myself on the methadone. And I'm very happy that I got myself using such a low dose of morphine. I'm one of the lucky ones. You know, there are many out there who are so heavily medicated because they want to zero out that pain. Well, if you zero out that pain and you get it to zero, you're liable to zero out your activity and your participation and your enjoyment in life. So get that pain tolerable without getting your head all cleary and fuzzy and messed up that you cannot enjoy your life. If you have families, if you have a partner, you know, you want to absorb as much of that because that is your peace. Absorbing as much happiness as you can is a great way to ignite those endorphins to make yourself, your body feel better about what you're doing. And when your body feels better and those chemicals are working and your endorphins are going, you will feel better. You know, my life, if I would have been, you know, stayed where they wanted me and laid up in bed and not been able to move and, you know, having respiratory distress and going through all of this, you know, I would have been dead by now. It wouldn't be 10 years later me sitting here telling you, you know what, get involved and be your own best advocate. Keep a journal, keep a pain journal. It's worse on this. It's worse when I do this. Okay, I tried doing this and I noticed this change in my pain. Interview your doctors. Go in for consults with doctors. You know, you can see one treatment specialist and still go in for a consult with another treatment specialist. You have that right to determine which doctor, which practice, is a team effort for you. They definitely will be cracking down even more so on the restrictions of opioids. So for pain care patients, get ready to go on a wild ride through this government and see where this is going to go. Don't get depressed. I want you to get involved. Don't stand back and let somebody else make those decisions for you. Because if they take charge, it may not be the best decision for you. They need your input to evaluate what is best for you. Like if they were treating you for cancer, if they were treating you for MS, if they were treating you for anything at all, for a cold, for a sinus infection, for a broken arm, they would want to say to you, how are you doing? And what can I do as a medical professional to help you? That's what they get their license to do. That's what they are supposedly best trained at for practices. Now that we have pain specialty clinics, it's a little bit more difficult to get through some red tape to get your foot in the door to say, okay, this is the kind of treatment that I want to go with. Yeah, you have overbearing doctors that think, you know, well, nope, what I know is better and you know absolutely nothing. Well, I know that those kind of doctors almost killed me. And I won't let it happen again. You know, I can't get my morphine refilled. Seeing Dr. Belcher would not refill my morphine, gave me Percocet, so I'll be doing Percocet. Thank God I'm on a low enough dose of morphine that it shouldn't affect me that badly going through a withdrawal process. Maybe a little bit of nausea, that kind of thing, but I don't think it'll be any big withdrawal process. I'm uneasy about it. I know that there's no fixing me. They would have to rebuild my spine completely from top to bottom. There's so many things wrong with it. And they still can't fix what's wrong inside of my spinal cord. So all of that mess is still going on. And all of that mess is still going to be there regardless. So that pain sensitivity and increased reflexes and the derma on my skin, I have certain areas that are numb, like the outside of my forearms are completely numb. The outside of my shins, the derma is completely numb. It's in certain places. I do get trigger point injections as well to try and relieve the fibromyalgia problems. I really want to thank our viewers, all the likes and the hearts and the support. You know, I hope that this video does get out there and this show does help people, because living with chronic pain is one of the most difficult situations. You get depressed. You don't want to interact. You hurt. You know what it's like when you don't feel good. And if you hurt all the time and you're having problems finding the right treatment and, you know, you're working good with one doctor and then, you know, suddenly they die and you're off to find new treatment and somebody else who's going to work with you. So here we go again, the roller coaster all over again. It's scary. I'm at a point, have I thought about suicide? Absolutely. Most mornings when I wake up, you know, the first thing, even before my eyes open, I feel my body, and that pain is there. There's no magic that's going to take that away. So I do have to be tolerable. and work at it at a tolerable level. I don't want them, I'm not expecting some miracle to change my life and put me back the way I was and to help me. But I do expect support and guidance and medical care that is a team process. Also in that is to have that support system. Now, the American Syringomyelia Alliance Project, they do have support groups. But unfortunately, one's up in Chicago, which is like 5 hours away from me, and one's over on the other side of St. Louis, probably 2 hours from me. So it's not something that I can get to easily. I do get their monthly newsletter, which lets me know of new studies and new research that is being done. Their board members, their specialists that are coming on board, the involvement. You know, I do my own research. If I'm given a new medication or a new treatment, or and I'm open-minded about things. I'm not closed off. I'm not saying, okay, this is the only thing that works for me, and I'm not going to do all of these treatments. I can't do that. I have to believe that within a decade from point that I began to where I am now, that treatments and doctors have changed, that they know more than they did. Sadly, with my condition, I don't see that. They are almost like, what in the world are you doing here kind of thing. Well, if you actually looked up syringomyelia, syringomyelia, yeah, it's a mouthful, and look at the debilitating effects, consider anything blocking free flow of your central nervous system fluid. Imagine anything. How would your body feel? How would you feel? It is difficult. It affects your entire body's functions. And if they progress and they grow larger, it changes. And it's going to change with barometric pressure outside. And it's going to change with the tension and the stress that you feel. The links that I'm going to attach to this video are going to be the Republicans and Democrats opioid use bipartisan agreements, how to find a pain management doctor, living with chronic pain, and the CDC guidelines for prescription pain, prescription opioids. So I want you to look at those links. Most of all, get involved with your condition. Find out about your condition. Know as much as you possibly can about it. Talk to your doctor about your condition. Let them know how your condition affects your life. What is it doing for you or keeping you from doing? We're down to the last 4 minutes of our show. I want to remind everyone that we can pick this up on another show. But more than anything else, if you have a family member who is going through these types of challenges, make sure that you check on them, that you help them out as much as you can. If you sense that there is an addiction problem, then definitely, get involved then and suggest addiction help. Look up information about that drug and the addiction side effects of it. I want to thank Ms. Brink again for putting up a great link. We will also get this out there. The U.S. Pain Foundation. Now, I know that I shared a link in the radio group before the show talking about a pain patient memorial week that they are having. That link is there also. She is the one that passed that on to me, and she's in the Southern Illinois area, actually closer to me than I thought. So I'm going to have a cup of coffee with her and kind of talk things through. But definitely get yourself some help. Get your family members some help. Watch the medications that you're taking. You've got to be able to do the research. Doctors will tell you, don't believe everything you read online. True, don't. Go to the National Institute of Health. Go to the National Spinal Cord Injury Center. Go to the Centers for Disease and Control. Go to the National Resource Links and even the Alliance Projects for your specific conditions. To find out what research and studies are being done and where they're being done at, what they're finding out. Don't be afraid to Google that information. And that voice in my head reminding me I'm down to my 90s. Sorry about that jump. It's hilarious, right? Anyway, I want to wish everyone the best of luck with this. It's a difficult situation at best. Take care of yourselves and try to be as positive as you can. Keep a journal for yourself. Plan your days of activities and take advantage of your good days. We all need that spot of light and laughter and love in our lives. And if we are restricted by the constant pain and challenges, then it is definitely something that we need help with. And, we need to smile and we need to laugh and we need to maybe even cry. But be your own best advocate and use your voice, because your voice is going to make the difference. Talk with the doctors. Make sure that you are communicating openly and honestly. Don't hold back. Let them know, this is my history, this is the injuries I have for the illness that I have, this is what I've used, this is what I found has been working or not working. Do you have any suggestions? How do you want to move forward? So, good luck, everyone. God bless. I wish you all the best, and just stay strong inside yourselves. Chronic pain, it can take your life if you let it. Don't let it. Don't let it. Be well. God bless. Thanks for watching. Take care till next Tuesday. Topics with Trish coming back at you live from the Red Room. Be well. Thank you.